Hello and welcome to this bonus Hidden Gems episode of The Travel Diaries, where some of my favourite guests from seasons 1 and 2 reveal their most loved secret spots from far-flung tropical islands and remote mountain kingdoms to remarkable architectural wonders that you might not yet have visited. I know from my own experience that any podcast not related to coronavirus is so welcome right now, so I thought I'd bring you one more. I hope this helps to transport you to somewhere far, far away and will inspire your future travel plans when we can all travel again. Now, let's get started with a stylish Scandinavian country close to many of us that I, for one, have never visited, yet three of my guests all picked it as their hidden gem. Historian Dan Snow, Mr. and Mrs. Smith's co-founder James Lawn, and chef Rachel Koo all reveal why Sweden, its capital Stockholm, and its wild and wonderful archipelago should be top of our travel hit lists.
Stockholm and its archipelago would be a hidden gem.
Oh, I've heard that's so beautiful.
Got to check. That's probably the most underrated place I've been in my life. Like, I don't understand why everyone doesn't go there the whole time.
So what would you suggest that someone does if they want to experience the beauty of the Stockholm archipelago?
I would go to Stockholm. I would check out what is a like Amsterdam, Copenhagen, one of Europe's great cities.
Yeah.
It's got the single greatest museum on planet Earth in it, the Vasa Museum, with 17th century battleship capsized about 30 seconds after leaving port on its maiden voyage. And because of the cold Baltic Sea, it's perfectly preserved. It is like, it is nuts. It's like the Goonies. It's crazy. And then you go out on a boat, either one yourself or one of the many boats that Beatles about, and you just go to one of the islands. And there's islands from an island the size of a rock with a little sauna built on it, by whom you don't know, and there's a little stack of firewood outside, and you just replenish the firewood when you leave and have a sauna, jump in the Baltic, mm-hmm. to bigger islands with hotels and restaurants and things on them. But I mean, it's just the best. That it is. It's thousands of islands, and it is. The people are amazing. The food is amazing. The weather is amazing. It's got it all.
I love, there's a wonderful little place in Stockholm called Etthem, and it is the most stylish hotel that you can possibly walk across the threshold of. Mm-hmm. It is essentially, I kind of try to coin a new name for this type of place, which I've called a private house hotel. So if you imagine you had a fabulous, glamorous, very wealthy aunt, and she lived in an amazing house, and she had a few staff, and she had impeccable taste, that is what Etthem feels like to me. And what makes it so special is it was designed, the owner is extraordinary, but she got the help from Ilse Crawford to design it as well. So it was kind of a collaboration between them. Mm-hmm. And you walk in, and you immediately feel like it's a home, but there's someone there who's hosting you rather than a general manager, and they kind of want to take you around the property, and you walk into the kitchen as if you're walking to someone's home's kitchen, but there's a cook in there rather than a chef, and you talk to the cook and you say, look, I'd love to have something relaxed tonight, but could we do something a bit more, I don't know, interesting tomorrow because it's our anniversary, let's say, and they'll create a 5-course menu for you tomorrow night. So you start to design what you want out of your trip.
It's a bespoke experience.
Yeah, exactly. But it's truly bespoke, but in a very relaxed kind of way. It's not forced. And they also, this sort of field to fork sort of trend, obviously it's been going on for a long time. They have their own farm outside of Stockholm where they bring all the stuff in as well. And all the, from the chickens, the eggs for the chickens, from the chickens to the you know, the salad that you might be having on your plate, to the vegetables you're eating, etc. So it's a really clever concept. It's very high end, so it's not cheap, but the rooms are impeccable. They are beautiful. And I think, yeah, I remember walking in there going, wow, I've never seen a concept like this before. It was taking a luxury hotel or a boutique hotel and reimagining it in this sort of private home sort of style.
Okay, so I will tell you one of my favorite bakeries in Stockholm.
Go for it, please.
So this bakery, so everybody knows the cinnamon and cardamom bun. You know, you have, it's very Swedish. They have this thing called fika. So fika, when I moved to Stockholm, it wasn't like, do you want to go for coffee? It was like, do you want to go for fika? So fika is like having coffee with a bun. or coffee with a cake. And I'm like, cake involved? Yes.
I think we should just always say fika from now on.
It's like include a cake or something, a sweet treat.
Yeah.
Anyway, this bakery, they do cinnamon or cardamom buns where there's so much butter and sugar in it that it caramelizes at the bottom and creates this kind of crispy caramel crust, salty caramel crust at the bottom, you know, where butter and salt and sugar and spices merge.
Wow.
It's just a pool of deliciousness. And not many good bakeries will have that same kind of caramel in on it. It's very rare. So that's why I really like this place. Mm-hmm. Plus, they make some lovely, hearty kind of rye and sourdough breads. Anyway, so it's called Lille Bros Baguerie, which means Little Brother's Bakery. So that is like my top spot for a bun or some bread. Or if you're lucky and you go around February time, then they have semlor. And semlor are they're kind of like a brioche type bun, spiked with cardamom, filled with an almond paste and topped with a cloud of whipped cream.
God, I don't think I could go there too often if I wanted to still fit into my trousers, but it sounds like the absolute dream.
Yes.
Some beautiful recommendations there. A trip combining a stay in Stockholm with a visit to the archipelago sounds like just the kind of at one with nature escape that many of us have been dreaming of right now. I'm also really excited about the new direct flight route from London to Luleå in Swedish Lapland, which is due to launch in December this year, making the new Arctic Bath Spa Hotel an architectural masterpiece, by the way, now far more accessible, as well as the famous Tree Hotel and many other great spots for chasing the northern lights, husky sledding and all those wonderful winter activities. Staying in Europe, travel editor and all-round travel guru Simon Calder reveals some of his lesser-known, quirkier spots for us to uncover.
I was really interested. You talked to Giles Brandreth, what a splendid fellow, mm-hmm. and he said he was born in Wuppertal in Germany, but he didn't say, and it's the home of the Schwebebahn, which is an upside-down dangling tram. And that's wonderful.
Wow.
Yes. And so that's definitely a hidden gem, very close to Dusseldorf and Cologne. I love, like, again, quite a lot of people you've talked to, sort of former Soviet places. And the place you can find the closest you're ever going to get to what it was like in the Soviet Union is Tiraspol, which is the capital of Transnistria, which is the breakaway, unrecognized segment of Moldova that is off the map.
What's that like?
Oh, it's just, you know, you have still got statues of Stalin, not to mention Lenin. You've got the sense of kind of public order, of everybody kind of watching everybody else, of nothing really being available very easily. It's so exciting and compelling, particularly for people who weren't lucky enough like me to be able to get to the old Soviet Union.
Is it quite brutal in terms of architecture?
Oh, well, I got yes, it is actually. Yeah,
quite stark.
I'm trying to think if there's any charming bits, and no, charming bits were thin on the ground, but just fascinating. And then the Azores, which I don't know why so few people go to them. I've done 7 of the 9 so far. I'm keep hoping to go back to the remaining two. They are just joyful, and each one is different.
The Azores are islands that are in the Atlantic.
So 1,000 miles off the coast of Portugal, Portuguese islands, utterly charming, incredibly cheap for some reason. I don't really know why.
What would you compare them to? Because a lot of people haven't heard of them.
They're a bit like low rent in every sense, Canaries, but kind of smaller and greener and more charming.
Right.
And actually, you just reminded me, I think probably the best single day's hitchhiking ever on the island of Santa Maria, where Concorde used to refuel. And I think I went three times in a row where the first car that came along stopped, which has never happened before. It's like golf equivalent of getting three holes in one or something.
Mm-hmm.
So the Azores would be there, and Syracuse in Sicily. Not many people go there. Billions of people fly into Catania Airport, and they don't just go out, wait by the bus stop. In half an hour, a bus will be along. It will take you an hour. It will take you to this miraculous city so steeped in history. Just, of course, invaded by every every civilization which swept across the Mediterranean. So lots of Greek, Roman history. Now it's slightly tottering Italian place. I mean, Sicily, I think, is kind of like a distilled, more intense version of Italy. So, so that's very good.
Oh, as always, plenty of excellent insider travel tips from Simon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb. Now heading to the gateway of Europe and Asia as adventurer Levison Wood takes us to Lebanon.
I think Lebanon, actually, it was a really, really... I was only there very briefly on the end tail end of my most recent journey around the Arabian Peninsula. And I chose that because it's, you know, well, it's on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. It's a kind of gateway to the Middle East. And so to finish there on the shores, basically on the boundaries of Europe, kind of brought everything full circle. And it yeah. felt like a bit of a homecoming. It's really, really beautiful. It was, you know, the mountains, the food... And very, very developed, actually. You get to sort of cities like Byblos, one of the ancient cities in the world. But you know, there's great cafe culture. And I'd love to go back, actually, and see more of it. And it's still got a bit of a reputation, you know, because of the political situation there, that people do tend to avoid it. But certainly from my experiences, from the limited time that I was there, you could absolutely go there for a long weekend and have a great time.
Yeah. There are some new hotels that are opening up there as well. Mm. So I guess it shows, hopefully, that... tourism is beginning again. Yeah. I think it was
you know, yeah. back in the sort of 60s and 70s, it was the sort of the Paris of the East, wasn't
yeah.
it? And sadly that all fell apart.
And what's the architecture like there?
Well, obviously it did get, you know, Beirut did get fairly destroyed in the war. But you know, if you go out into places like, you know, the Bekaa Valley and there's the ancient Roman ruins in Baalbek, for instance, are just magnificent.
So it's steeped in history.
Absolutely.
Oh, Beirut's such a stylish city. If you're planning to head there, I recommend checking out Art House Gamay's. It's an art hotel in the Bohemian district there. Very cool, very hip. Now, heading farther east, starting first with all-round style icon Lucy Williams and her hidden gem in India. Then Lonely Planet's Peter Grunert on discovering the kingdom of Bhutan. And finally, TV cook Nadia Hussein on a tiny Thai island that made a big impression.
I went to this amazing place
God, I hope it's still there. I believe it's called Annapura. And it's about an hour and a half from Jaipur in the countryside.
Yeah.
Trying to find this place was hilarious. As in, I'll tell you what it is first. It's like a two-bedroom, beautiful sort of villa with a pool. It's got a yellow Labrador that wanders around. And it's right next to this, like, village. It's apparently they see like jaguars sometimes walking around. It's just so magical and just feels like you're staying with friends in the it's and after you've been somewhere like Jaipur where it's like amazing but very quite hectic and full-on, this it's a proper retreat. Beautiful old like coffee table books everywhere and sort of Rajasthani print throws, and it's just amazing. I was so glad we found it, and I did do a write-up on that, and I've seen a couple of people go there, sort of friends of mine who work in travel have been there, and it actually makes me really happy.
So I went to Bhutan and reported from Bhutan.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
It had been hovering around the top of my bucket list for a long time. And I'm quite strange in as much as I like to keep things in front of me as some kind of motivation and incentive. So I resisted discovering Bhutan for myself for many years because I wanted to keep it hanging there. But finally, I got around to it. Now, Bhutan didn't really allow tourists in until about 1975. And still there is a minimum cost. In certain months, it's $200 a day. Certain other months, it's $250.
It's not easy to visit, is it?
It's very hard. Yeah, you're right. And even just accessing Bhutan involves an adventurous flight. The main airport is at quite high altitude, and there's only one kind of airliner that's been adapted with special engines to fly and land in a short space coming in at high altitude. So most people come from Kathmandu. I think you can come in from India from Kolkata as well. So we flew in via Kathmandu. You fly over Everest. So already just to see Everest looming up is mind-blowing. I was reading about the same experience the other day, and somebody said seeing Everest for the first time is like meeting a celebrity and being starstruck. And it felt like that for me seeing it. So yeah, you land at the airport.
It's meant to be like quite a hair-raising landing, isn't it? Between the peaks.
Yeah, we didn't manage it the first time. We had to do a sort of a roundabout and come in and take aim the second time. Kind of enjoyed it in a weird way.
Yeah.
It's a country where a lot of people in their day-to-day lives wear national costume. The men wear an outfit called a go, which is a kind of tunic, a sort of checked tunic with giant cuffs, although they'll often wear that with Nike trainers, or you know, this doesn't quite get to the shoes. It can be. A lot of them are more, I'm seeing maroons and dark greys, a bit more sort of sedate colors. And it's a culture, it's a kingdom, and it's a culture that's heavily influenced by a version of Buddhism, a version of Tibetan Buddhism. So you're in the Himalayas with this Tibetan Buddhism that infuses so much of the culture whilst you're there. So I was thinking about some of the experiences I had. A lot of what you do there is visiting what are called zongs. Zongs are fortified monasteries. And some of them stretch beyond medieval times. They're ancient, these white, very geometric, slightly sort of Chinese influenced in the gables and the pantiles on the roofs, in their architecture. They have these just incredibly beautiful frescoes painted inside them. Of tigers and mythical beasts. I found that so beautiful to be there with the yak butter lamps burning and you know, giant sort of horns being blown and monks. Although the boy monks we met when we did a lot of trekking, and you're pretty much constantly at high altitude. So for me, it took quite a while to acclimatize.
Yeah.
So my heart was beating away constantly, but we were meeting these boy monks, and of course they're just asking me about Premiership football and what's going on with Manchester United, and the power of Manchester United has reached into the furthest, least known corner of the Himalayas.
Amazing.
We chose to, there's a monastery called the Tiger's Nest, which is the most photographed site, so we trekked past that and we kept going, and we got to about 4,500 meters. And we went from very hot and sweaty, lower down at about 2,500 meters. It was very bright, intense sunlight, to heavy blizzards at the top. If you don't mind me briefly taking this in a slightly bawdy direction, I'll just say. So we were taken to lots of different farms as well as monasteries. And in rural houses, there's another form of painting that's kind of infamous for Bhutan. So the patron saint of Bhutan is somebody called Drukpa Khinley. So Drukpa Khinley was somebody who came to Bhutan promoting a certain kind of Buddhism. And his theory hundreds of years ago when he came there was to break down social conventions. And so people would be more imaginative about new teachings as well. So he'd get everybody drunk, he'd break wind, he'd have possibly romantic encounters with all kinds of women. And that's how he spread his philosophy, apparently. But he's a kind of folk hero. He's a sort of subject of laughter in Bhutan as well. But he is revered on a certain level. And so in pretty much every rural farmhouse above the front door, you'll see what is euphemistically termed as the magic thunderbolt of wisdom, which is, for want of a better term, it's an ornate phallus painted above the doorway. I'll spare you the details, but it's highly anatomically correct. And that's an auspicious sign. That's a sign of good luck, really, that you see everywhere.
That sounds charming.
It's such a reverential sort of place. Yeah. And the general demeanor is quite calm and measured, and that vibe you get in mountain communities in so many parts of the world.
So when I was traveling and I went to Thailand, I thought we were going to go to a kind of like, you know, kind of typical kind of resorty type area where, you know, all the Brits go. And I thought, no. And what we went to this beautiful, absolutely beautiful island called Kosakorn. Mm-hmm. And it's got a population of 2,000.
I've never heard of it.
And you go on a boat, like a really bouncy boat, and then you get on, and then you literally, there's a little port, and then you turn up and somebody helps you with your bags, and you get up onto the island, and they've got, it's a population of 2,000.
So tiny.
Yeah, really small. And they've got the rubber industry. So they've got they've got rubber trees, and so they tap for rubber. And you kind of walk past, and as you drive past in your little tuk-tuk, you can see rubber plants and little pots where the rubber's just kind of dripping. And that's where they make most of their money. Wow. And you've got these rubber mats everywhere.
And is it kind of a tropical paradise-y vibe?
It is exactly that. So you kind of drive through in these little tuk-tuks, and there's no proper cars, it's just like little tuk-tuks everywhere. And there's little stalls. And if I was going to say, go anywhere, go to Kosakorn. It is the most beautiful island. They've got these little houses, these little resorts where you can go and stay. And you just feel like a local. You don't feel like you're on holiday. And it's really funny because I was sat having breakfast in this little kind of, these little huts, and I was sleeping in my own little hut, which was beautiful. It was this beautiful round hut right by the edge of the sea. So you could see, hear the water. You could hear the kind of water just swishing back and forth. And it's just beautiful. And then I went for breakfast, and I never expected to go there. And then I sat at breakfast, and somebody said, "Are you Nadia?" I was like, "What? No. I did not expect to come on a tiny island of population of 2,000 and for anyone to recognize me." And
so that is how life has changed.
How life has changed. And it was surreal. But if anyone was ever going to go to Thailand, I would highly recommend Kosakorn. It's a beautiful, beautiful island. And of the 2,000 people, I never met one. Everybody there was absolutely, they were smiling and happy and lovely. And they've got this wonderful grandma who makes the best grandmother's curry paste.
Right. So you have to seek her out.
Find her. Everybody knows her on the island. If you say, where can I find grandmother's curry paste? They will point you to her.
Wow. India, Bhutan and Thailand. Sounds like a pretty good round trip, if you ask me. Annapura, oh, a magnificent boutique hotel surrounded by lemon groves and roses in the Rajasthani countryside, and it's pretty affordable too. And then the remote Himalayan kingdom of Bhutan, oh, a real bucket list destination, isn't it? Where rather than GDP, life is measured by gross national happiness. I just love that. If you're looking for the ultimate luxurious escape, there are five very new Six Senses hotels spread over the west and central valleys of Bhutan have recently opened, and they look out of this world, though they don't come cheap. And Koh Samui in Thailand. Have any of you been there? Have any of you tried grandmother's curry paste? Let me know. I'm at Holly Rubenstein on Instagram and Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to hear more from these guests and the rest of season one and two, now is the perfect time to go back and have a listen. There are 24 episodes of pure escapism for you to enjoy from the safety of your own home, of course. And if you're a fan, please spread the word, leave a review or a rating, as this really helps other listeners to discover the podcast. I'll be back in the summer with season three. In the meantime, do take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom, and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.